Hi, welcome to another new episode of the Declutter Me podcast with myself, Shalina. This week, I wanted to delve into hoarding. Hoarding is a big issue here, as well as in the rest of the world, but especially with the older generation. They're wary to have someone come in and help them declutter, and the younger generation are getting very frustrated, but they're limited by what they can do to help them. I've seen a few potential clients who I think have hoarding tendencies, but have not helped them eventually due to the reservations of having someone come into their house and help them. So I thought it'd be great to discuss this today and to discuss what hoarding actually means and how to identify it with someone who is an expert and a professional organizer. I've asked the lovely Jasmine Slay of Change Your Space to join our podcast today. Jasmine is a member of APTO like me and has been helping her clients in Exmouth, Devon, since 2013, and is the go-to expert in the southwest of England. Welcome, Jasmine. And I was just having fights with my friends yesterday about scones and the right way to do it. I am supposedly doing it the Cornwall way, and they do it the Devon way. So, and I've been to Devon and not Cornwall, so I don't know what's wrong with that. You know,
Rachel, I'm from Somerset, so I can take them either option and still be okay.
Yeah, well, at the end of the day, it's cream and jam and scones, so anyone would be happy. But yeah, no, we were having a massive, like, not massive, but we were having a bit of a discussion about it yesterday while we're having tea. So anyway, hi Jasmine, how are you doing?
Keeping well, thank you, Selena. Yeah, keeping well.
Awesome. And how is the weather there now? I heard it was raining the other day.
Yeah, it is raining, but we take the nice autumnal days when they're bright with glee.
Yeah, I do miss that. I miss the rain, proper rain, not sandy rain. Anyway, we're not going to talk about weather today. So anyway, we're going to talk about you. So you started in 2013. So what were you doing beforehand, before you became an organiser?
Well, I worked for about 12, 13 years in local government. I was sort of the person they brought in for projects, sort of short-term projects, performance management and business planning. So in short, so, you know, I spent most of my working career encouraging people to do things they didn't really want to do.
Okay, perfect.
corporate work. Yeah. And with extra on their workload, and trying to find ways to build relationships with people outside of my team so that they would participate fully with corporate projects and try and find ways in which it would meet their own departmental interests, really. So right. I enjoyed that a lot. Yeah, it's great doing what I do now, of course.
Yeah, so what made you become an organizer and, like, leave local government and do that?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was part of the big exodus from local government here in the UK 7 or 8 years ago. Had the birth of my son, it seemed a practical time to think about doing something that was more flexible. But actually, I think more than that, I was quite hungry to be part of tangible change in people's lives, tangibly changing things for the better. Mm-hmm. I had looked back on my sort of 12, 13 years in local government and felt like I'd moved a lot of paper around. I'm not sure what I'd actually achieved. And of course, these things are very subject to the latest political populist sort of agenda, and some things you'd be working on would suddenly not be important. Whereas I thought, wouldn't it be great to work in a place where it was much more clear what needed to be done and how it was going to make a very real difference to people.
Ah, right. Okay. And then, so you got into organising. What were you doing at the beginning? Because I'm assuming you didn't get into hoarding straight away. Were you just a generalist? What made you get into it?
Like most people, I think, yeah, I just dipped my toe into helping people get their homes shaped up in a way that was more accessible and comfortable for them, and their, you know, they could fulfil their interests, that sort of thing. But very quickly, very early on in my career, I mean, I was a bit tenacious anyway, because I really did not want to go back to a desk job. So I was contacting everybody and anybody who was going into people's homes. And one of the early contacts I had was with the Fire and Rescue Service here in the UK. And very nice, very enlightened manager there at the time brought me in to do some joint working with their home fire safety visits that they were doing, where people were finding it was difficult to move through the property without trip hazards and that sort of thing, where maybe front door, back door wasn't as accessible as it should be, that sort of thing. Things that would start to raise a bit of concern with right. public agencies. So I was brought into that quite early. And then, of course, very quickly you realise when it's really significant, when somebody's home is really full to the point that they are swapping home comforts for stockpiling, there's a particular way in which people present. And actually, at the time, there was nobody else across the whole of the Southwest that was working with people carefully. You know, right. the only option was leaving people at risk or putting in full clearance, neither option, right. which was good. Whereas I provided an option to work carefully with people. So just word spread then across housing associations and local government housing projects that there was an alternative that could work collaboratively with tenants and people where they were finding it difficult to move around their property due to it being so full.
Right. And then, so I've seen those different levels of clutter and the pictures. I mean, I've been to sessions during our conferences mm-hmm. where they've had that. And I mean, I have seen quite a lot of clutter in houses, you know, where you can't move. But what is it for you? Is it is it different levels, or is it the more extreme that you can't even walk in and you have to start removing things gradually?
I think there are no two homes that are the same. And the clutter, yeah. I think the clutter rating scale, like you say, is quite useful. The way that it's useful when I do training for public agencies is that they have a common language when they're talking to each other, and maybe with families, and you mentioned about families sort of being involved as well, where they have a common understanding, saying the home is very full, or my mother is a hoarder, actually doesn't really tell me enough at that stage, because right. everybody's parameters of these things are quite different. And the clutter rating scale gives that at least like a common sense of what sort of level of how full it is we're talking about. Yeah. And also for public agencies to understand, you know, in times of restricting their budget, you know, having restricted budgets, what's the sort of threshold by which public agencies will fund support, where it's serious enough and where it isn't, so that it's useful in that regard. And evaluation. So I mean, in no way do I say, look, I'm going to take it from a 9 right down to a 2 in 3 weeks. It's not like that, but it's helpful to give a sense of, well, this person's at a 6-7, which is getting dangerous for them, we can take them to a 4 or 5 by doing X, Y, and Z. So it is useful as a tool. But the thing is, there's so many more questions to ask. I mean, the big thing is, the person able to start seeing that they want things to be different? That is the main thing. So the actual personality of the person and their how the home has become so full, how pronounced their challenges are in terms of their own reservations about moving things around. I mean, obviously we ask questions like what's being stored and is it every room? But it gives us just a starting point really to that conversation, and then we really need to get to know the person before we can do any more work.
So what, and yeah, that's another thing about, like, because if you're getting referrals from the associations and from the fire and rescue, like, when does the client become involved, and is it a long process to get them to understand what you're going to do and that to let you in? Because I assume that they're very reluctant to let anybody in to touch anything, you know.
I think that's the thing that I've learned over the last 7 years very, very quickly, is that if somebody has just their home has got quite chaotic through a variety of reasons, or a bit they've got overwhelmed for a variety of reasons, but they've called and they're willing to start doing things, and then you can set out a project and you can start to make inroads together carefully. But if somebody is more seriously hoarding, and they've been hoarding for a long time, and they've been referred by an outside agency or a concerned family member, they can instantly be on the back foot. And So there's an awful lot of lead-in time building trust. And also they can often present in a way where there's a multitude of concerns that they have about their home yep. and their life, and they will present them all at the same time. And so finding in all that the patience to listen to it all
yeah.
you know, with proper ears, proper empathy, and then come up with some sort of small project and goal that you can both agree on can yeah. take a bit of time.
So roughly, I mean, for me, I go in a day or half a day and help people. This sounds like weeks or months. Like how long does it take? Say if there were a clutter rating 7 to go down to say a 5. I mean, I suppose I'm asking the wrong question. Like, it could take ages. It depends on the person, obviously, doesn't it?
It could. And I think in reality, if somebody's home is dangerously full, what you're looking to do to keep your own motivation as a professional organiser, keep the relationship going and still be funded, if it's publicly funded, is come up with some realistic, tangible goals that you can tick off that improve their safety. What you right. can't do is say, we're going to get all of this sorted out for you by, you know, 6 months' time.
Right.
Let's make sure your boiler can be serviced before Christmas. You know, we're very specific. And that way, and also it keeps it on the positive, because, you know, nobody wants to focus on, well, actually, we need to extract at least 3/4 of what's in this property for it to be safe. That's not a good opener.
No.
With hoarding difficulties.
And I mean, from here, and I've said it at the beginning that there's a lot of Middle East families, a lot of local families. They have lived in these big villas and houses, and, you know, the commercialization of everything came around in the 80s, and they've just bought and not got rid of anything. And I have a lot of clients, especially the fathers, have bought things and don't want to let go. VHS, DVDs, you know, they've had the video cameras from the early days, so they've got all the pictures, and trying to convert it here is very difficult. Mm-hmm. So there's all those kind of things. And, you know, trying to explain to them, you know, that you need to start making space for yourself. Some people buy 2 villas just so that they can fit stuff, you know, sleep in the other house and they have all the stuff with that. And just trying to explain to them that it's the waste of money, that they could have a comfortable life, blah blah blah, but that doesn't seem to work. So, you know, how can I, you know, what would you suggest to deal with, you know, these kind of clients and helping the you know, the kids who are saying we need help? Because I mean, it leads to depression for the younger generation, because they're living with all this clutter, which is a big issue here as well. Yeah, so what's your thoughts? I know it's a very big question, but
the thing that's the hardest to hold on to, which you can do as a professional organizer, but is so difficult when you're a family member or a close friend,
yeah.
is that holding on to belongings is it comes from worry, fear, and you know not being too melodramatic about it, but there'll be some angst about it. And yeah. so it might come across, especially the gentleman, I have to say that it comes across quite, not aggressive, but it can be quite defensive when you suggest sorting out, because all they see is loss, something going out that they might regret, some loss yeah. of identity. It's all about something being taken away from them, and nobody likes that. So no. trying to concentrate on the positives is exactly as you said, you know, the positives, you have the extra money in the bank, or, you know, the space can be used for something very tangible. Especially, there's lots of people who find the manageable project of we are going to turn that room into, I mean, look behind me, this is my husband's studio.
Right, okay. Very cool.
Yes. We're going to turn that space into something that suits you.
Right, yeah.
It will be done in a day. I joke about it, but there has to be some positive gain. There has yeah. to be something that's going to be rewarding at the end of it. Otherwise, the focus becomes on what's going out.
Yeah.
Everybody likes that, really.
Yeah, and I think that seems to be the thing here, that they don't want to get rid of things, and they think they can, it can be used by the next generation or by somebody else. And of course, with things like VHS and videotapes, it's just, you can't use them. Even though I had one client, he did have a lot of VHS, but he also had 20 videos, a system which he'd got from his friend who had closed his video shop. Yeah. So I didn't know what to say. I was a loss for words for once. So I was just like,
one of the things that's quite helpful from what you've said, I mean, a couple of things. One is a lot of it's about compromise. If somebody has 20 videos, and it would be better if they had one, you know, if they took two or three away that they really felt had had it and really were no use to anybody, that is starting small, compromising, not expecting it all to go, I think it's, you know, it's helpful. What we tend to do with all belongings is, no matter what the body, and I always say to people, no matter what you're showing me, I've probably seen more of them somewhere else.
Exactly, yeah.
Obviously keeping the confidentiality of all clients, and I'm deeply empathic, of course, but, you know, we do get to see a lot. So getting everything out so that they can look at it and say, the sort of trick is, we're not going to get rid of today, we're just going to have a little look at what you've got. We're doing a little audit of what you've got. Okay, so you're already tricking the brain into not worrying, which is a state of mind to be in when sorting. We're going to have a little look. We're going to see what videos you've got there, you know, what sort of brands you've got there. And then we're going to look, we're going to kind of put them in priority order, ones you like best, ones that, you know, you think you can do something with, and ones that are really, and then suddenly that the decluttering bit comes easy because 10 of them are ace and 10 of them have had it. So that, you know, the focus is on what are my favorites, not which ones are rubbish or which ones are extraneous to need, I should say.
Or I find sometimes when, you know, when I do get to penetrate through, and I'll see, especially they have the Arabic or Indian tapes, and they'll have duplicates. So I'll say, look, you've got a duplicate. So have one and give the one, another one to me so I can listen to it. And they'll be like, oh, that's a good idea. And then, of course, I go give it to donation. But just like, you see, you've got rid of one. Like, I'll have a listen, because they'll, you know, they think I'll listen to it and be culturally more, you know, expanded or whatever. But I don't have a tape player anymore, so
that's a really good point as well, which is the rehoming, so that things have another use, or somehow people do want that. They can sometimes hold on to things because they're really crippled by the guilt of the fact that something will just go to landfill, or just be not used, obsolete. But if they feel like it's going to go and do something positive, even if it's small. I mean, even when we get to sort of recycling, I say, look, the parts will, you know, it's one of the most buoyant parts of the UK economy is recycling. We need to get that thing out there to be reused and enjoyed, you know. So you make a good point that when people feel like it's going to a good cause or a good use, then it makes it easier to let go of.
Yeah, it's all about sustainability here now. I mean, the recycling is still in early stages here, but the, you know, using it or selling it, that's a big thing, or putting it in the limited recycling bins we have, it's a good start. So if people want to, you know, get friends or family or whoever into, you know, to get a organizer like yourself to start helping them, what's the best way for them to approach you, and to also approach their you know, the person that's hoarding? What's the best way to start the process?
I mean, if it's somebody who's concerned about a family member, they absolutely should speak to family member first about doing anything, and just be gentle. It will take every ounce of feeling okay with yourself as a family member to engage in a conversation, because it's going to be difficult. And you know, do everything you can just to keep it light and positive, and perhaps end the conversation when you think it's going to be problematic, because it can become quite a defensive chat, like I say, for all the reasons we've mentioned before. But if they feel very worried about the person and their safety, then obviously there are agencies that they can start to approach about their welfare. But from my point of view, having a trusted friend and a family member is fantastic as a small way of people starting to make small tangible projects start to happen. Where I think it's more problematic is when family members are quite friends are very close, and they really, because they care so much, they get very frustrated things are not moving quick enough.
Yeah.
And I would say if somebody's home is very full and they're being quite defensive about it, then a professional organiser is probably the way to go, even if it's just to get some advice or even as a sounding board. I think I must have had about 10 calls this week from people who are just using me as a sounding board for the conversations they're having with family members.
Wow.
I do appreciate how frustrating it is for them. Will any of those come back to recruit my services? I don't know. I hope so. But I mean, I just put it out there. You know, when people have hoarding as a real serious issue, they've been living with it for 15, 20 years. It's not going to be undone overnight. But yeah, get to start. And then where they think it's appropriate, even if they will speak to a professional organiser on the telephone, no judgment, no obligation, I think it's worthwhile. Yeah. For an independent sort of expert view, and they're not too close to it all, so they can take that little bit of time back about hearing what somebody's actually saying.
Yeah, that's very true. And talking about like the psychological aspects of it, do you suggest for them to go for therapy or to a counsellor while they're working with you, or is this something that happens naturally? Because I can imagine that there must be something underlying with them before, you know, for them to get to that stage.
It's always the best scenario if somebody is doing therapy alongside our work, or has done therapy first and then does our work. That's right. The ideal, but that's not the majority of cases. Is there's right. They need their boiler sorted out, and that's where they're focusing their efforts. The most I can do is make representation to the individual or to the funding agency if I feel like this is something much more pronounced than a period of depression or anxiety that is now alleviating. It's something much more, you know, hoarding disorder is a secondary level psychological condition, and you can see it and tell almost on the phone with somebody, but if it's really making it difficult for them to sort out their belongings, then I can make recommendations. It's listening to the person and seeing where they are. Ideally they would be making those steps, but if we work with people anyway, and you know, hope that our positive coaching is something, and that they will go on from there to look at the psychological aspects for themselves.
And you hope that all the time. I mean, a lot of my clients are dealing with grief or divorce, so there's all that aspect. But convincing them to go for therapy, it's a decision they have to make, but I'm sure it's the same for you. And then also, what about you? What you're dealing with is mentally challenging, so how do you cope with it? Because I mean, for me, I'm exhausted at the end of the day. I have to have a long shower and eat good food. But yours is at a whole different level. You know, it must be exhausting.
I'm not a very empathic friend. I do get empathy overload, and I'm recognizing it even in myself at the moment. We've been very busy after lockdown, very busy, and like I say, there's been lots and lots of calls, and there will come a point where I will have to switch my phone off for the weekend. I look around my home and really count my blessings that I don't have a problem with stuff. I've got space. I enjoy my space. I've got belongings. I know what I've got. I know what I've got where, and I enjoy those things. And I just find myself really grateful, and I have to get myself back in that grateful spot, ready to come out there next week, you know, and deal with people who find it painstaking to let, you know, a wrapper or something go. So I have to sort of gird myself a little bit. But yeah, much of that is about just resting, being sort of grateful for my space, and and just relax a little bit. Yeah, but I am an understanding friend, but there comes a point where if I've got any friends with problems, I have to sort of schedule them in because I'm at the level where I can take any more.
I know, I can imagine. I mean, I come home and I will have dinner, watch Netflix, and I'll watch the most brain dead thing ever, or a Disney movie, because I can't think after. And so, yeah, for you, it's that whole other level, because it's not decluttering, it's dealing more with talking to them and, you know, being empathetic. I can't pronounce it. And emotionally, what's the word they call it? Emotionally available to help them as well, isn't it? So so what I always ask, what are your top tips and tricks? I think it might be a bit more difficult in this sort of situation, but what are your top tips and tricks?
I may have just sort of touched on them early on, and that is, you know, the whole let's have a little look at what you've got. And that, even for advice for family and friends, I would say if they feel like they've got a problem, a challenge in sorting out, rather than go, right, we're just going to cut in half what you've got here, to start with, should we just have a little look what's in here? We did work with a client recently who was finding sorting really problematic. Didn't necessarily have to be a full hoarder, but just somebody who found it difficult. And I said, shall we do books? And I saw in his eyebrows, he said no. And he kind of looked, he was quite quiet. I was like, shall we do books? And I said, let's just have a little look. Let's just, got a lot of books around, but just go and have a little look at what you've got. And I went away with 6 or 7 sacks of books. But he enjoyed the process because he was talking me through where he got the books from, where, you know, it became an enjoyable process where we were just examining. It wasn't about, I had the bags at the ready, but it wasn't about him handing me books to go, that we just set it up that he was going to show me. It becomes an inevitable part then of prioritizing and seeing what you've got. You get grateful for the things that you really like, makes it easier on the other side to let other things go. So that would be my biggest tip, I think, is to start it as a let's go see project.
Yeah, let's see. That's a brilliant idea. I think I'll have to do that. I don't know if you saw, I watch Gogglebox quite a lot. So they had one with, there's a housing association show on TV right now, and they had a man who passed away and they'd already cleared his house. So do you, you know, how do you deal with this poor man? He had such beautiful pieces of art and maps and books and things. Like, how do you deal with that? Because of course it's a lot, it's hoarding, but it's worth a lot sometimes, isn't it?
It is. I think clearing the way so people can see the things that are valuable is usually a good point, because there are lots of things that people can make decisions on that are easier. And, you know, in the current climate, valuations are not always true to what things would be, you know, out there in terms of antiques and things like that. But yeah, I mean, the difficulty I have is that I try and see things through other people's eyes, and when people hoard, everything is special and important. So I don't really see that much of great significant value.
Right.
Secondly, I mean, I wouldn't know if I saw anything of value, because I'm seeing it through their eyes, everything that we come across really is potentially useful to them. That's one of the things that quickly changes when you work with people who have accumulated and hoard, is that you cannot prejudge whether something that looks like it's done in and had its day is actually not special to somebody. So for all sorts of reasons. And also because I think the sentimental reasons why people keep things are much more interesting and more poignant to them than whether it was worth £1,000, for example. I'd not had that circumstance come my way, but generally speaking, we start with clearing the way so that they can enjoy and see the things that are of value and of interest to them. Rather than worry about getting those things out first.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Thank you so much for this. How can people find you, especially in the southwest of England?
So they can go to my website, which is www.changeyourspace.co.uk. So it's Change Your Space. I'm also on Instagram, which is the main social
platform.
all my years now. I think it's just easier. People like the visual, and I don't do lots of before and afters, so don't expect that from me.
Right.
But we sometimes take pictures of unusual things we found in people's homes with their permission. Things like that. So it's quite a good visual way of connecting with the strange world of professional organizing. And they can find me there by it's Jasmine with an E on the end, Jasmine _ change your space.
And you should have more pictures of things that nobody knows what they are. Like, I love those when we have it in our association where it's guess what the item is. And and I'll spend so long thinking of what it is. They are brilliant, especially because it's old things from home. And I'm like, oh my God, I remember this from when I was young. Well, thank you so much for being on the episode. I really appreciate it. And it's just been eye-opening and just so interesting and helpful as well for me, because, you know, I do see these things. So thank you so much. Thank you as well to the listeners for listening to the Declutter Me podcast. If you'd love to get some more tips and tricks, you can follow us on social media. We're also on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook at DECLUTTRME. And if you don't want to miss our weekly podcast, you can subscribe to Declutter Me on Apple, Spotify and Angami, and any of your favorite podcast players, as well as YouTube. Thank you again, and we'll see you next time.